Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. And sell more with less effort thanks to the Shopify magic, your AI-powered all-star. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/redcircle, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/redcircle now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/redcircle.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Between the shadows of reality and the fringe of our own fears lurks a world of monsters. Strange creatures and frightening phantoms who test the very boundaries of our science and superstition. It's a realm of mystery and legend, a place of fact and fear. This is Monstro Bizarro. July 11th, 1972, 8-year-old Terry Harrison and his 5-year-old brother Wally were playing behind their house in the small town of Louisiana, Missouri, when they heard a low, throaty growl. Moments later, Terry looked up to see a huge, hulking figure standing approximately 15 feet away. Their home was located at the end of Allen Street, a dead-end road at the foot of a heavily wooded area known as Marzoff Hill. It was not out of the ordinary to see a wild animal there, but this was no ordinary animal. It was tall and stood upright like a human, yet was covered in long black hair which obscured its face. It had no neck and a large pumpkin-sized head, and reeked with a terrible odor. To make things worse, the thing had splatters of red on its fur like blood, and held what appeared to be a lifeless dog in one arm. Terry panicked and ran towards the house screaming. Wally followed close behind. Their sister Doris, who was 15 at the time, was standing in the bathroom at the back of the house. When her brothers rushed inside hollering, she looked out the window and saw the creature standing near the hill. It was at least 6 feet tall, maybe 7, and fully covered in dark hair. It stood upright like a human, but it absolutely didn't look like one. She watched in terror until the thing turned and ran into the woods. Not knowing what else to do, Doris told her brothers to stay inside while she called their mother at work. When her mother, Betty Harrison, received the panic call from her daughter, she immediately called her husband, Edgar, who was also working, and told him to go home and check on the kids. She said something bizarre was going on. Edgar did as she asked and arrived at the house within 30 minutes. The kids were still upset, cowering in the kitchen. Terry, who had been the closest to the thing, told his father that it was, quote, big with long black hair all over. Its face was obscured by the hair hanging down, and it moved back and forth in a menacing way as it stood there in front of he and his brother. It had what looked like a dead dog in its arms and was covered in red spots that Terry assumed was blood. Doris confirmed what her brother said. All three kids were adamant that this was not a person. It was some kind of monster. Edgar assured the kids that everything would be all right, then went outside to search the area behind the home. He did not see the creature, but did find an area of flattened brush just 50 feet from the house where it looked like the thing had been standing. He also found what he believed to be faint footprints in the loose dirt with black hairs around it. Edgar looked but found no traces of blood on the ground. Terry seemed a bit uncertain whether it was actually a dog the thing was holding. He could only say that it looked like it had four legs and was covered in dark hair just like the creature. Edgar wondered if it could have been one of its offspring. Either way, the whole thing was extremely alarming. The town of Louisiana, Missouri was a very safe place. A place where his kids could play outside without concern. Now Edgar was not so sure. This was unlike anything he'd ever heard of or faced in his life. Could there be a monster living on Marzoff Hill? The possibility was horrifying. Welcome to the podcast. I'm your host, Lyle Blackburn. I offer the best in strange but true tales of cryptid creatures, spooky legends, and paranormal horrors. In this episode, I'll be recounting the strange case of Momo, the Missouri Monster. The story of this Bigfoot-like creature may sound like something from a B-grade horror movie, but I assure you, it happened. So follow me back through a time tunnel of terror to the year 1972, when news of the beast first made headlines across the Midwest. When Edgar Harrison received the call from his daughter Doris, telling him of the frightening beast she and her brothers had seen in the backyard, he could not have imagined what a dramatic effect this would have on his family. Because this was only the beginning. The town of Louisiana, where the Momo story begins, is located in Missouri about halfway between Arkansas to the south and Iowa to the north. It's essentially a small riverside town sitting right on the banks of the Mississippi River, which serves as the state's eastern boundary between it and Illinois. I probably never would have heard of the town if not for its association with this hairy, scary monster tale that's intrigued me since I first read about it as a kid. The story is one of several featured in Elwood Baumann's 1978 book, Monsters of North America. The lead-in page of the Momo chapter has the word Momo in big block letters and a drawing of a hairy, ape-like arm reaching for a pumpkin. I didn't know what this signified, but I definitely wanted to find out. The overall description of Momo seemed much like the ubiquitous Bigfoot, yet it aligned closely with the alleged southern types, such as the Boggy Creek Monster and the Skunk Apes, beasts who were infinitely more hairy, frightening, aggressive, and smelly, much like the Boggy Creek Monster had in Falk, Arkansas. Momo sightings in the early 1970s stirred up a rousing reaction of fear, fun, disbelief, and a let's-go monster-hunting attitude, which grabbed the attention of not just Missouri, but anyone in the world with an interest in the burgeoning study of cryptozoology or the paranormal. As someone who has pursued mysterious monsters well into my adult life, I finally made my way from Texas through the miles of cornfields and trees to the little town of Louisiana on the east bank of the mighty Mississippi. There, I uncovered the wild and true story of a monster whose hairy presence still haunts the Midwest. In the hours following the scary encounter, Edgar Harrison managed to calm his family, and as night closed in, they tried to resume a normal evening at home. The kids went to bed, but Edgar himself couldn't sleep. His mind was on the ominous hill that rose up behind the backyard, wondering if something unknown to science could possibly be living there. He was finally feeling weary around 1:30 a.m. when the calm was broken by the sound of something prowling around outside the house. He heard it move across the backyard and crash through the brush as if it were running. It sounded big and heavy. The creature must have returned. The thought was so alarming that as soon as dawn came, Edgar enlisted the help of four neighbors who helped him do a cursory search of the hill behind the home. However, they came up empty-handed. The day passed without incident, but later that night, the family heard the same noises, as if some kind of large animal was creeping around in the woods behind the house. This time, Edgar searched the area with seven other men, but again, they found no evidence of an animal or otherwise. On Friday, July 14th, the intensity ramped up. That night, the Harrison family was hosting a weekly prayer meeting at their home with approximately 30 attendees from their local church. At around 9 p.m., after most of the parishioners had left, Edgar Harrison was standing outside with 12 remaining guests when they saw several, quote, balls of light moved from east to west just over the trees in the neighboring yard. They saw two others, one white and one green, go down in the vicinity of a nearby school. No one could figure out just what kind of lights these were. After everyone had left, Edgar was outside playing his guitar when he heard a monstrous sound. I heard something that sounded like a loud growl, he told reporters. It got louder and louder and kept coming closer. His family heard it too and came running out of the house. They jumped into the car and pleaded with Edgar to get in and drive them to safety. Edgar wanted to stay and see what was making the noise, but his wife and kids would have none of it, so he got in the car and began driving away from the home. Doris Harrison remembers the incident well. In an interview, she told me,
we had had a prayer meeting that night, and everybody had left, and my dad was just sitting outside in the yard with his guitar, messing with it, and me and Mom was just cleaning up, you know, and the next thing you know, that thing just let out a hell of a holler, and my husband was there. My boyfriend at the time and my dad, and we just all started toward the car, and my little sister said she remembers Richard, my husband, grabbing her and just tossing her in the car by the pants, you know. But we all took off like a bat out of hell, and Dad hollering, it's coming off the hill. You know, I think about it now, it's funny the way it happened, but then it wasn't. It was scary. We left the house for quite a while, a couple months. We were, as kids and my mom, we were too scared to go back up in there. All I know that when it did holler that night, that it hollered, it was the most horrible sound. It would just chill through your body.
As they were driving away from the home, the family was suddenly confronted by a surreal sight. A huge mob was walking down the dead-end street towards their house, some of them carrying weapons. Apparently, neighbors had also heard the strange noises coming from the hill. Many of them had also seen the unexplained balls of light. Egger stopped the car, but before he could converse with the crowd, Miss Harrison screamed out of the car window, "Here it comes!" The crowd quickly turned and fled down the street in a panic. Both Edgar Harrison and a woman named Maxine Miner called the police to report the strange sights and sounds. Chief of Police Shelby Ward fielded both calls and decided the situation was serious enough to dispatch two deputies to the scene. Officers John Whitaker and Jerry Floyd went to the Harrison home and searched the vicinity, but neither of them saw or heard anything. After the police left, Harrison and several neighbors set out to search Marzoff Hill more thoroughly. As they were scanning the woods with flashlights, they found a dilapidated old building. The interior reeked with a pungent odor which Harrison described as a moldy horse smell or garbage smell. It seemed like a probable hiding place for a large animal, yet they saw no signs of anything there. The group continued to explore as much as they could of the ominous hill for the next few hours, but it was a daunting task. The trees and undergrowth were thick, and in the darkness, anything could have easily just hid beyond the scope of their feeble flashlight beams. Finally, they gave up and returned home. The next day dawned with an eerie silence, but that didn't do much to calm the nerves of Edgar Harrison. With a monstrous dog-killing beast on the loose, and a gang of armed vigilantes chasing it, he feared for his family's safety. When they awoke, he had them pack enough belongings to last them for the immediate future and headed off for town where the family owned a restaurant. The Harrisons would sleep there until either the incident blew over or the beast was apprehended. By now, the entire town of Louisiana was in a fearful frenzy. As details of the Marzoff Hill incidents began to make news headlines, other reports began to surface. First, Miss Clarence Lee, who lived a block and a half away from the Harrisons, said she heard a terrible, growling animal sound the same afternoon the Harrison kids had seen the hairy thing. Robert Parsons and his wife also heard the sound. A nearby farmer confirmed that a dog he'd given to his daughter had been missing for at least a week. He wondered if it was the dog the beast had been clutching in its bloody hands. Another resident saw a dark, man-like figure walk across a road near the hill at approximately 5 a.m. on the night Harrison and the others were searching. It could not be identified. A few days later, on July 18th, two boys were hiking around on Marzoff Hill when they came upon, quote, the thing standing in the woods. It let out a deep, guttural growl, which scared them so much, they bolted in terror and reported the sighting to the police. The boys said it had a foul stench and resembled a bear, but wasn't a bear. Around the same time, a woman told reporters at a local TV channel that she had definitely seen a black, long-haired thing cross a road. Yet another resident told Chief Ward he saw the thing near Highway 79 north of town. It appeared to be carrying a sheep or a dog. Still others claimed to have also smelled a terrible odor while walking in the vicinity of Marzoff Hill. Chief Ward was skeptical of the reports, but there was no denying that he had a problem of some kind on his hands. If it were a bear or even a prankster, somebody was likely to get hurt, especially with the growing number of citizens who had taken up arms and plunged into the woods looking for anything tall, dark, and hairy.
There's something out there and it has the people of this town scared to death. I get about 10 calls a night from good, reliable citizens. I've been trying to convince people it's probably a bear or a practical joker in a gorilla costume, but I'll have to admit that it really it could be something else. The more I keep hearing about it from people, the more difficult it is for me to be skeptical.
Given the situation, Ward decided to organize an official search. On the morning of July 19th, Ward assembled a group of 20 men, which included 8 police officers, State Conservation Officer Gus Artis, Edgar Harrison, 4 out-of-state reporters, and some local volunteers. The search party headed to Marzoff Hill, where they combed the woods for nearly 3 hours. In the process, the men spread out about 30 feet apart and checked as much of the brush as they could, scanning for anything, whether it be footprints, hair, or even the remains of a dead dog. The searchers did the best they could, but in the end, whatever it was, be it person or animal, apparently laid low, and the search ended in failure. Maxine Miner, who had called the police several days earlier, felt the search was unsuccessful because it had been conducted during the day rather than at night. She told Ward she had heard the creature growl on several occasions, but it was always after dark, between 10 p.m. and 10:30 p.m. The vocalization, she said, started as a low growl and ended as a high-pitched scream.
Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. And sell more with less effort thanks to the Shopify magic, your AI-powered all-star. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/redcircle, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/redcircle now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/redcircle.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Ohio, ready for some quick mental health facts? Let's go. Nearly 2 million Ohioans live with a mental health condition. In the U.S., more than 50% of people will be diagnosed with a mental illness in their lifetime. Depression is a leading cause of disability worldwide. So why are some of us still stigmatizing people living with a mental health condition when we know all of this? Let's listen to the facts and beat the stigma. Ohio, challenge what you know about mental health at beatthestigma.org.
On July 20th, Richard Crow, a reporter for the prominent paranormal magazine Fate, arrived on scene with a man named Lauren Smith. According to Crow in his subsequent Fate magazine article, they first reported to the police station and were then escorted to the Harrison residence. When they arrived at about 9:30 p.m., they found Edgar, Doris, and her boyfriend Richard Bliss sitting in the backyard waiting for something to happen. The Harrison family was still sleeping at their restaurant in town, but Edgar and occasionally others kept a nightly vigil at their house on Allen Street, hoping that the creature would return. Mr. Harrison seemed committed to solving whatever mystery had befallen his family, one way or another. Edgar and Richard Bliss eventually led Crow and Smith up a path behind the house onto Marzoff Hill. Within a short distance, they came to the remains of an old garbage dump, which looked to have been recently disturbed. They could see tin cans and bottles, which had been dug up and strewn about. Harrison pointed to a spot where the graves of 2 dogs had also been dug up and their bones scattered. As the men progressed, the hill became steeper and the landscape wilder with dense trees and tangled brush. Eventually, they came upon what appeared to be two impressions in the ground. The first was over 10 inches long and 5 inches wide, and resembled a large human footprint. The other was 5 inches long and curved, like the print of a hand. Given the dry, hard soil surface, Crow estimated that it would have taken a minimum of 200 pounds of pressure to create such impressions. Harrison then showed Crow and Smith the abandoned shack where he and the group of previous searchers had smelled the terrible odor. There was a pile of leaves and debris in the corner, which they theorized might be some sort of sleeping nest. While they were examining the building, Egger's dog, who had been tagging along, suddenly ran off. Crow said they smelled an overwhelming stench that could only be described as resembling rotten flesh or foul, stagnant water. Shortly thereafter, they heard several dogs begin to bark furiously in the direction of Dotary Pike Road, a short distance away. Harrison was sure the monster was responsible. The men readied their cameras and scanned the woods with their flashlights, but nothing emerged. After 5 minutes, the odor was gone and all went silent. The men finally returned to the Harrison home, where they kept vigil until 3 a.m. Twice more, they smelled the repulsive odor, but never laid eyes on anything. The shadowy, fleeting nature of the incidents made it hard to figure out just what was going on. A few days later, a local resident named Ellis Miner came forward to recount his own chilling encounter with the beast. Miner was a 63-year-old fisherman who had been living along the Mississippi River since he was 6 years old and knew everything that walked, slithered, or swam in the region. Or so he thought. Miner said that around 10:30 p.m. on July 21st, he was sitting in front of his house on River Road when his bird dog began to growl. The dog rarely growled at anything, so Miner flipped on his flashlight and aimed it in the direction the dog was looking. In his own words, "I showed a light right there about 20 feet up the road. It was just standing there, hair black as coal. It had long hair on top that hung down, so I couldn't see its eyes or face. The thing was at least 6 feet tall with hair that covered its entire body. It stood upright on two legs in the center of the road. As soon as I threw the light on it, it whirled and took off. It's the first time I've ever seen an ugly-looking thing like that." Miner noted that if his dog hadn't growled, the thing might have crept right through his yard without him seeing it. The thing seemed to be headed for the Mississippi River itself, which runs parallel to River Road, only a short distance from Miner's home. When the light hit it, the thing turned and ran across the adjacent railroad track and disappeared into the dark woods beyond. "I once stood right there on that road where Ellis Miner claimed to have seen the creature. I imagine, there in the dark by the wide river, it would have been frightening to see a large hairy creature in the beam of his flashlight." Things got even weirder on the night of July 29th, while Edgar Harrison and several local college students were exploring Marzoff Hill. They were standing near the top of the hill when they heard what sounded like a gunshot from the road below. They immediately rushed down to investigate. When they got close to the road, they all distinctly heard an old man's voice saying,
"You boys stay out of these woods."
The chilling voice seemed to have come from a nearby cluster of trees, no more than 20 feet wide by 50 feet long. They searched the trees thoroughly, but found nothing. They were stunned. A few days later, a farmer named Freddie Robbins found a set of mysterious prints on his farm 8 miles south of town. They were roughly oval-shaped and appeared to have three long, thin toes. It was hard to say if the tracks had been made by the hairy creature, but either way, it added to the mystery. On the afternoon of August 4th, four boys, including two of Edgar Harrison's older sons, were fishing north of town at the Salt River when they saw what appeared to be a large, dark animal swimming across the water. The object was moving in a definite line against the current upstream, one of the boys told a reporter at the time. It appeared to be an animal with a head bigger than a human, with its shoulders sticking out of the water. The boys conceded that it might have been a bear, but they weren't close enough to say for sure. "We looked at it until it was out of sight, and then we left," one of the boys explained. Whether there was a real-life monster stalking the small town or not, authorities were continually dealing with the problems it caused. When someone reported a sighting at a private aircraft landing field close to Louisiana, and also at nearby Har Field, the Federal Aviation Agency, FAA, instructed airport officials and pilots to be on the lookout for the creature or any, quote, unidentified object. Back in town, Chief Ward was still dealing with the increasing number of townsfolk and outsiders who were hell-bent on hunting the thing. To top it off, reporters began circling the area like vultures with notepads. Their headlines would only make it worse.
A riverside town haunted by a hairy monster. Momo was spotted again today in Louisiana, Missouri.
It didn't take long for the events to create a certified sensation, not only locally, but well beyond. Stories were initially covered in the town's Louisiana Press Journal newspaper, and within a short time by a wider range of papers spanning across Missouri, Illinois, and Pennsylvania. When the articles were picked up by the United Press International Wire, they found an even larger audience in the Chicago Tribune, New York Times, National Enquirer, and of all things, the Wall Street Journal. When the reports first hit newsprint, the monster was called by several names, including the Pike County Monster, Mystery Beast, Hairy Biped, and The Thing. But it was Momo, a clever play on the abbreviation for Missouri, M.O., and M.O. for Monster, that caught on as the favorite and the one which endures today. Momo is short, catchy, and gave the creature an almost cuddly vibe, despite its reputation as a foul-smelling, pumpkin-headed, hairy beast with a penchant for carrying dead animals. As the story of Momo spread, it attracted more and more curious travelers, reporters, and monster hunters who descended on the little town of Louisiana in droves. A dozen Navy men from Texas were among them, as well as carloads of people from surrounding states such as Illinois. The hotels and restaurants became filled with visitors. The weird wave of tourism was a shock for townsfolk at first, but they quickly adapted. The restaurants added things like monster burgers to their menus, while retail stores advertised Momo-sized bargains. Nearly every advertisement in the Louisiana Press Journal began to incorporate some form of a monster motif, whether it was the wording, a funny drawing of Momo, or both. Even big advertisers such as JCPenney's got in on the act with monster sales and beastly illustrations in their ads. Given that Momo was essentially a monstrous, dead dog-toting thing of unknown origin, it was really quite ironic, especially in the cases where Momo was used to advertise food products. During my trip to the town in 2018, I was able to view all the original newspaper articles from the 1970s. The ads featuring various imaginative drawings of Momo were just amazing. Momo was undoubtedly a boon for the town with the additional influx of revenue. The monster hunters, however, were nothing but a problem for Chief Shelby Ward and his police force. A group of at least 20 men showed up at a local restaurant after reading the news headlines. While eating breakfast, they asked the waitress where Marzoff Hill was and said they were going to hunt the monster. Luckily, one of Chief Ward's officers caught wind of their intentions and ordered them to leave town before they could plunge into the woods. Not all of the would-be monster seekers could be sent off so easily, however. Dozens of armed men were already swarming Marzoff Hill and the surrounding woods, ready to shoot anything which looked remotely big and hairy. In the process, they trespassed on private property, trampled crops, and broke down fences. Shots rang out from the woods at all hours, and residents could only wonder if they'd shot the creature, somebody's livestock, or worse, somebody. On one occasion, two hunters mistook a bull for the monster and shot it dead. The owner was furious and called police, but there was little that Chief Ward could do since there was no way of knowing which of the so-called monster hunters was responsible. Ward was concerned the next victim might be a human or that some of the vigilantes would get lost in the deep woods surrounding his small town. The woods were filled with plenty of known hazards, such as venomous snakes and thick briars. The hills were also dotted with caves and cliffs, just waiting for amateur sleuths to make one wrong step. The potential for human disaster was much more worrisome than the monster itself in the eyes of law enforcement. Not to mention the time officers were spending on the phone listening to various reports and complaints. In an effort to prevent accidental shootings, Chief Ward declared Marzoff Hill off-limits. A wooden roadblock was placed across one of the main dirt roads leading from the town to the hill, while other deterrents were placed accordingly. It was the only thing he could do. The news coverage also attracted investigators of the paranormal kind, who specialized in tracking hairy bipeds and extraterrestrial beings. Two of these were Hayden C. Hughes and Daniel Garcia of the International Unidentified Flying Object Bureau. The duo came from Oklahoma City to investigate the incidents, under the presumption that the creature may be of extraterrestrial origin. At the time, there was not many organizations that specialized in the investigation of cryptids or Bigfoot. But since Bigfoot-type creatures were occasionally associated with UFO activity, and witnesses in the Momo case had reported seeing strange lights in the sky, Hughes and Garcia felt the extraterrestrial angle was a possibility. Upon their arrival, Hughes and Garcia looked at tracks supposedly left by the monster behind a service station. Next, they headed to the Harrison home where they interviewed Edgar Harrison and Doris's boyfriend Richard Bliss and looked around the property. The police gave them permission to camp on Marzoff Hill that night, provided they submit an official report of any activity or findings. The night, however, was quiet. The next day, Hughes and Garcia were interviewed by a United Press International reporter and were filmed at the Harrison residence by a television crew out of Columbia, Missouri. During the interview, Hughes described the creature as being an upright, hairy biped with a large, pumpkin-shaped head and glowing orange eyes. He said the alleged creature could be connected with creatures from outer space. The resulting press coverage, with mentions of UFOs and animals from outer space, brought an even weirder angle to the case. Subsequent articles tended to echo Hughes' description of the glowing orange eyes, although this was not entirely accurate. The most reliable witnesses stated that the thing had long hair that hung down over its face. The eyes were not visible.
While some connected Momo with Bigfoot, others, like Hughes, sided with the extraterrestrial angle. Still others believed it was all hogwash and hoaxes. But no matter what the explanation was, there was something strange going on in Missouri. Something that perhaps had been going on for far longer than anyone realized. It seems that when I dig into these famous monster tales, there's always more to the story than meets the eye. Sometimes life is stranger than fiction. Join me for the exciting conclusion of Momo the Missouri Monster in the next episode of Monstro Bizarro. If you enjoy my podcast, please consider donating to my Monster Research Fund so that I may continue to pursue these mysteries and bring you more exciting episodes. Go to LyleBlackburn.com and click on the podcast link. There you'll find the instructions for donating. And remember, every little bit helps. Thank you so much. I'll be back soon with part two, more Momo. More monsters, more mystery.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Ohio, ready for some quick mental health facts? Let's go. Nearly 2 million Ohioans live with a mental health condition. In the U.S., more than 50% of people will be diagnosed with a mental illness in their lifetime. Depression is a leading cause of disability worldwide. So why are some of us still stigmatizing people living with a mental health condition when we know all of this? Let's listen to the facts and beat the stigma. Ohio, challenge what you know about mental health at beatthestigma.org.